On ABC Radio National, Amanda Smith with you. Now, if you enter the grounds of the Heidi Museum of Modern Art in Melbourne just at the moment, you might be confused by the funeral parlour sign that's there. But it's okay, you are in the right place. The sign is part of a mid-career retrospective exhibition called In Memoriam. It's the work of Callum Morton. Callum is known for recreating and reworking modernist architecture and investing it with stories and emotions. When he represented Australia at the Venice Biennale in 2007, it was with a work called Valhalla, a three-quarter size replica of a house that his father had built. Callum Morton is also influenced by the great modernists like Mies van der Rohe, whose Farnsworth House is the inspiration for one of the works in this exhibition, and Le Corbusier, whose log cabin, the only dwelling he designed for himself, is also an inspiration. And there are some new works in this show as well, to do with the history and architecture of the gallery itself, which was once the home of John and Sunday Reed and the famous Heidi Circle. Suzanne Donisthorpe is with Callum Morton at Heidi.
In Memoriam, big survey show, you're tempting fate?
Well, yes, I think artists have a difficult relationship with their past work. You're always, you know, thinking about the next work, not necessarily too keen to look back, and I certainly looked back with a degree of trepidation. On the one hand, it's a bit of a funny nod following on from Ed Richet's work, I Don't Want No Retrospective, which in fact became the title of his retrospective. But also, I think it fitted quite nicely into, I guess, the history of Heidi and the ghosts that surround this place and how those ghosts are kept alive and not buried properly. But certainly there's a lot of, there's the kind of imprimatur of death surrounding this joint as well. So I think there was a bit of a, on the one hand, a kind of funny turn in it, but quite a serious one as well about looking back, but also reflecting on the particular context that this was happening in.
You're 45 years old. In artistic terms, you're in the middle. You're not emerging, you're established, but you were very successful quite young. Has there been any drawbacks in that early success, do you think?
I don't think I was very successful quite young. I think that's not right. I mean, I came from art school in 1989 and certainly had critical success probably mid-90s. But, you know, when I came out of art school, we showed an artist-run spaces and I was showing the people that, you know, couldn't get shows anywhere else. And so it was the first wave of, or the kind of next wave in the 90s of artists, or the beginning of the artist run space through Store 5 and that kind of period. And I showed there, that was my kind of context. There are a lot of artists that came out of art school straight into the commercial sphere and were very successful and have been very successful. And I think that question is probably a bit more appropriate to them. I think that...
You have a very impressive resume. I mean, there's 14 whole pages of it.
Oh, well, you know, you have a show on the side of a road and you call it, you put it on your CV, I suppose. But you know, I have done a lot, I suppose. But I'm just saying in terms of that success, I feel that's come later, you know, in the scheme of things.
Is there things that you would have done differently, looking back from this vantage point?
Well, yes, probably everything. But I guess that's the trial or the terror of the mid-career show, when you have to look back and you kind of stare into what you've done. And, you know, I certainly was pretty neurotic about it to begin with. But I suppose when you stare back, you kind of commit to what you've done. If you don't own what you've done, I think you're in sort of trouble. But I think there's certainly lots I want to do. There's always books to have been written and, you know, films to have been made and other works to have been done. But, you know, I'm not really thinking about that.
When you look at it, do you think, oh, I can see where I've come from, I can see... And it is an interesting thing to have a look at that 20-year journey. Mm. Does it make you feel that... you know more clearly where you're going in the future? Does it help you to see into the future?
In every show, there's always a work, I think, that announces the next work. And I am very much the next work person, I think. You know, I'll certainly address a context that I'm given, if I'm given one, and all the kind of multiplicity of sites around, say, a place like Heidi generates ideas for work. And I am that sort of artist. I like to have the context to work off, which is probably why I can say I'm as good as the next work kind of thing. So, you know, it's projecting way into the future. That's a difficult thing to do.
A lot of your practice is about lives led in houses that are no longer there, ghosts in kind of ghost houses. Valhalla was a ghost house built in response to a house that your father built. The gas and fuel building that was demolished to make way for Federation Square, the hotel on the East Link Freeway, where the solitary cat now lives. Are you haunted by ghosts?
Is there still a cat in the ears, is there? I heard that. Am I haunted by ghosts? You know, if there aren't ghosts that I'm personally haunted by, I think I'm haunted by, you know, the world's ghosts as much as anybody else. A ghost is something that really hangs around because it's not buried properly. So if that's a kind of definition of a ghost, so someone like Heidi is kind of haunted by that. It's surrounded by a kind of almost a voyeuristic set of narratives about these lives led. What interested me about that was there were kind of these two things that were going on in my head. On the one hand, there was this contest of ideas around, you know, the 30s and 40s and 50s and those and what those artists were producing and what was at stake. You know, grand ideas, I think.
Those artists being Joy Hester. Albert Tucker and Joy Hester.
Albert Tucker, Sidney Nolan and Joy Hester. And then this kind of personal...
Gossipy kind of
story. And the collision of those two things is perfect for me because I think it's the personal and the public colliding. And because of the gossipy stuff, you can't really get to the contest of ideas a lot of the time. And because this whole world that they constructed is the kind of myth around which people come to visit the place, and it becomes a sort of theme park, if you like, of, you know, art history or architectural history or whatever...
But that would fit in with your practice. I mean, the theme part of architectural history is kind of what you're talking about in a way.
Yeah, I am interested in how those kind of histories become spectacle, and I am interested in other forms of spectacle using the structure or the visual register of the theme park.
There is a possibility that it becomes deeply sentimental and it takes away from the kind of more serious purpose of a place like Heidi to make it about those people's lives rather than about their ideas.
Yeah, I think when I was kind of measuring up and researching this kind of history, you know, immediately the gossipy one is compelling. You know, I felt like I wanted to represent both those things in some way. I haven't really immersed it in the kind of gossipy, I don't think. Mm. I mean, I've made the fireplace.
Maybe you should describe it.
Well, I'll describe that room, actually, if you'd like. Because it starts at one end with International Style, which is a 1 to 10 scale model of the Farnsworth House, and then there's a model of Villa Savoy called Open House with these two films projecting out of it. And then a little model of Le Corbusier's Cabanon, which is the cabin where he died.
With a heartbeat inside.
Yeah, and he died the day I was born. So it was this kind of this, you know, story around that. So it's got a little heartbeat, but if you look in the window, there's a little brain, floating brain in there too. So those models are at a kind of particular scale, you know, doll's house kind of scale. And then when you go through those the kind of walls into the next room, you've got gas and fuel at 1 to 34 scale, which is the number of years it was alive for, which were the gas and fuel buildings that used to be where Fed Square is.
With a little voice down in the basement crying out, help me, help me.
Help me, please help me, which is my voice, but taken, you know, mimicking the voice from the 1958 film of The Fly. And then there's in the end room, there's a 1-to-1 scale model, so the work's called 1-to-1, of the fireplace that's in Heidi 2, which is the McGlashan Everest house. So what you've got in that room is this stretch of scales from a kind of diminutive through to full scale, which is it's like the closer you're kind of squeezing things down a portal, the closer you get to the kind of site of origin, the bigger it gets, you know. And so one-to-one, yes, it's I've built it at one-to-one. It's ripped out of its context, if you like.
This is the fireplace we're talking about.
The fireplace, I should say. And so I haven't done the pit with a very evocative carpet and all that. I've just taken the fireplace out. And I think when you remove it and decontextualize it and put it in a room on its own, it kind of looks like a crematorium. It kind of, you know...
Or the heart of a family, two people gather around a fire.
It is the hearth of the house, and it's the room that was occupied the most in that house. And I have put... there's a recording, the kind of last recording. I think the only recording is Sunday Reid on tape and John Reid, and it's in 1981, they're old, and he's being interviewed by Richard Hazer, and Richard Hazer's been edited out, and it just sounds like Sunday Reid and John Reid talking about pretty banal memories.
What? You're pretty cool. Yes, I think I had an income of £350 a year, and I had to pay my way entirely with that.
How did you afford holidays?
Well, you just did, you know, went on very cheap holidays. I had a motorbike, that was my great joy, and I used to go all over the place. And
with a dog?
With a dog, yes, I had a dog. It was a mongrel, it was a cross between a Yorkshire Terrier and who can say what else.
How'd you keep the dog on the motorbike?
Used to ride in the sidecar, I bought a sidecar for him.
And then I've put this fairly schmaltzy Mozart under it and pushed the sound a bit further up the fireplace to cast them as ghosts, if you like. But it's quite banal, and it's quite old person's home kind of thing. And
it is nonetheless their authentic voices coming from a replica of their fireplace in this place. So it is really spooky. They are like, you know, they're coming back from the dead to talk down the chimney.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not, the conversation isn't gossipy. And I guess that's the point I got to, that through all that stuff of being interested in the gossipy, but then interested in the contest of ideas and which should I privilege, and I'd done all this research to get to this fairly basic outcome, if you like. And I mucked around in the edit with those voices, and I was going to get actors to do it, and I kind of went through all this stuff. But when I heard the tape just on its own, it just felt right that in a way it was just two people's lives in the end, and that, yeah, sure, they were experimental lives and there was all this kind of stuff around it, all this kind of spectacle around it. But when you listen to it, all that spectacle kind of fell away, and I like that. So I kind of made it sentimental, but it is kind of eerie, but I think in some ways it's sort of tender too.
I think, yes, twice in the winter and once in the spring.
You
were a good skier. Oh, I wasn't a good skier, but I got around and I... enjoyed it tremendously.
You fell in love with that?
The spring or with the girls?
Girls.
No, I fell in love more or less, I suppose, with one girl.
But then, you know, the little voice intoning, help me, please help me, in Gas and Fuel, I mean, could be read as Sweeney Reid. Straight away, Sweeney Reid becomes the kind of tragic story. And it's probably the real ghost that haunts Heidi, I think.
Because we have to remember, Sweeney was Albert and Joy's son, who was then adopted by Sunday and John, who didn't have their own children. And he killed himself when he was quite young. That's the story, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the story. And, in fact, I don't even know if it was Albert Tucker's son. In fact, the feeling now is that, in fact, he was the son of an affair that Joy Hester was having with a jazz drummer. So, you know... Anyway, there are so many stories, and coming back to that idea of them just being it was just a couple of lives that had a fair degree of tragedy around it, but they tried a lot of things in a kind of experimental period, you know, culturally. To me, say some of the big ideas that I've always been interested in, like modernism is a big idea, and modernism has many faces, and, you know, here was a kind of a sort of crucible of modernity, and it's as much about the return of modernity and its constant return, you know, the return of those ideas.
And the utopia that often fails.
Yeah, the utopia that fails, but I think that I see more really the grand ideas of modernity. So if we're in a period of great turmoil in the world, now, the pressing in of climate change and how that affects the way we approach the built environment, everything in our lives. That's just one example. So ecologically, economically, politically, so everything is being looked at again or needs to be kind of looked at again. They're the ideas that were being contested by the Reeds in those early days. So I'm quite interested in the return of those things. So it's not eatable in the sense that I'm always trying to kill it. I'm just interested in the fact that it returns and that the ghosts keep chattering because the ideas are never resolved or things are never resolved.
So now you've staged your own funeral show. Are we going to have the Callum Morton theme park?
Well, it is a joke amongst friends of mine that I do want to open Callum's World, but I don't know in this climate whether anyone would be willing to give me money to get Callum's World off the ground. But I do think that somewhere like Heidi, if they gave me the garden, I could just sort of carve off a bit of that land and open.
He's looking at it now.
I'm looking at it right now, but yeah, I suppose mine would be the one you drive past on the way up to Queensland. Callum's World is next to kind of, you know, Australia Zoo and on all that, you know. So if any takers out there who want to give me some money to start Callum's World, you know, taking donations now.
He should put that idea on one of those crowdfunding sites. Callum's World, somewhere on the Sunshine Coast, one day, maybe. Meanwhile, Callum Morton's mid-career retrospective exhibition, In Memoriam, is at Heidi Museum of Modern Art in Melbourne till the 16th of October. And he was speaking with Suzanne Donisthorpe.